Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Wolverine 24/7 podcast, your audio source for all things Michigan football, basketball, recruiting, so on and so on. I'm your host, Zach Shaw. Steve Lorenz on the phone lines with me, as always. We have not done this in 4 weeks, so we're back. I was on vacation. Then I can't remember what our scheduling conflict was. Then he was on vacation, but we're all back now. Should be fun few months here. I feel like this offseason, partly because basketball has a little bit more going with them and football, probably a little bit more optimism heading into this fall than last fall. So a little bit more of a fun offseason. Have some fun topics today. Obviously, you can check out all of our podcasts on our iTunes page. You can ask us questions on Twitter throughout the week, and we'll field questions usually the day before the morning of. We can't get to all of them, and so we try to pick the ones that promote the best discussion for this podcast. But regardless, we'll start with basketball. Not a whole lot has happened in the 4 weeks. Mo Wagner went pro. I think that might have come like the day after we recorded our last podcast. Charles Matthews dipping his toe in the draft pool, seeing what's out there, checking the temperature, but has not signed an agent. Steve, maybe you feel differently. Personally, him not being invited to the combine, I'm pretty much expecting him to come back for one more year at this point.
I mean, it's about as tangible an indicator as you can get that he's running a major risk. If he decides to stick in, is it still only first rounders are guaranteed a contract in the NBA, right?
So if you're but technically, of the top 55 picks last year, 53 of them got guaranteed deals.
Okay.
But it's still, I mean, he's not on a lot of second round draft boards. I think scouts are kind of looking at this maybe even more so than Mo last year, but they're kind of looking at it like, okay, you're here to learn more about the process. He does want to compete. I mean, Beilein said that he fully supports this every step of the way and that, you know, Matthews is someone that wants to go toe-to-toe and give it a full, earnest effort. But I think if you're not invited to the combine and you're not appearing on draft boards, probably a good indicator that you'll be back, especially someone like him who has a pretty clear path, at least in my eyes, to make it on these draft boards next year, you know, work on your shooting. He showed a lot of growth in the turnovers and in ball distribution, but, you know, continue that progress and be kind of the go-to guy. So I mean, I never know, and I'll never blame a player for going pro. I went to school and now I make money. I know which one I would prefer. So I'll never criticize a player for that, but I would imagine this is a scenario where they are going to get Matthews back. As far as Mo, he's trending toward the first round or early second round. Kind of expected that. I think he's one of those players that when people see him make 10 threes in a row or people see kind of a little bit of the offensive fluidity he brings, you know, and then also see that he is a better rebounder than he ever was, I think he's someone that people will like more. Plus, you know, the teams that are being rumored to be interested in him are the Knicks, the Nets. They have some Michigan players on their team. They have some Michigan ties in their office. So certainly could see something with him. As far as basketball's future, Steve, you were maybe around for that 2012 class, but I don't know if we've ever seen Michigan have this kind of pull with such high-level recruits. For those that missed it, the 24/7 Sports 2019 rankings were just released like an hour before we recorded this. And Michigan is not just in on, like trending very, very heavily for 2 5 stars. I mean, like 80% of the crystal ball or more. DJ Carton out of Iowa. He's, you know, also I think the other two that are contenders for him are Ohio State and Indiana. And then Jalen Wilson out of Texas. His mom's name, or not his mom. He's named after Jalen Rose. His mom's a big time Michigan fan. And he fits Michigan's system like to a T. They're both in the top 30 in these rankings. Carton is, 23? And then Wilson is 29. So, I mean, you know, we talked about the 2018 recruiting class. You know, this one won't be a 5-member class, but heck of a start for them. You know, to be this far in on these two, to the point where like everyone just kind of expects this to be the two-member class. Pretty good start.
Yeah, I mean, we had our discussion before we got on here about, you know, we brought up Jaden McDaniels, who was bumped all the way up to 10th overall, would be ranked higher than both of these guys. I'm not, you know, Mr. Basketball Recruiting. McDaniels was a name that I only just recently became familiar with.
But didn't take long to form an opinion about him, though, right?
No, I mean, it's and that's what we talked about is, you know, the difference with basketball and football. It's like you can't, and I view it as it's got to be close to the same, you know, where it's like Michigan, you know, pushing the scholarship numbers pretty close. So if say they get Wilson Carton, and, you know, they're be pushing the scholarship numbers pretty close. But I think it's the same way as it is in football, where you can't turn down a five-star prospect if they want to come play for your school. And right. I know the phrase I always use in football is they'll find a way. And I have to assume that the same would hold true, you know, in basketball. You can't turn down talent like that. You can't, you know. And so
one thing to note, though, is basketball, we see a little bit more, I think I'd argue more than football, we see a little bit more of players wanting to be the star on their own team. So like someone like Jaden McDaniels from Washington, you know, does he want to come to a loaded Michigan team for his one and done year and kind of be like the third or fourth option? Or does he want to go to Washington and put up 25 shots a game and maybe be a player of the year like Trae Young did? Or, you know, you see that a little bit more where these five stars, it's not that they don't like the other schools, but they also want to be kind of the centerpiece. And if they're already in on two guys who might be five stars by the end of the cycle, does McDaniels want to join that group, or does he want to have his own show somewhere else? So I'll be curious. Right. Go ahead.
I think it's not too dissimilar from, I think, what you see at the quarterback position in college football, the recruiting cycle. You know, it's like we talked about last year, Michigan wanted to take two guys. It's very hard to do that, you know, when, you know, you have, there are enough programs out there you'll be the guy, you know, for two guys to want to sign up for the same program, regardless of like, you know, past the how well the coaches, maybe the track record of development, the success of the program. Like, it's just very hard. You know, of course, the exception, at least this cycle, was Alabama's already gotten two quarterback verbal commitments, but One is Bear Bryant's great grandson. The other one's actually the younger brother of Tua Tagovailoa. So that's
a little different, though. I would argue.
So that's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying is like it took two deep connections for even Alabama to get two in the same cycle, right? So so there is that pull to be the guy on the football field, the same way, at least at the quarterback spot. You know, so I think there's some similarities there, you know, with what you said about basketball, where you can be the guy. I mean, you know, you could be the guy at Washington for a year and you might not get any better.
That's Beilein's calling card right now, right?
Exactly. And that's where it's like, you know, it's, if you're for sure, you know, going to play for, if you're for sure a one and done guy, what are you aiming for then in that 1 year? Wouldn't you think, because your eyes are already set on the pros, you know, again, way different than football here, that you're going to want to play for the program that's going to put you in the best position to make that next step the easiest, right? But again, there is that draw, you know, to be, like you said, a Trae Young, where they can just let you shoot from like three quarters of the court.
And think about like Trae Young, for a second, because he's a household name. Honestly, Kentucky, I follow basketball very closely. You know, off the top of my head, I can't necessarily name who Kentucky's leading scorer was. And maybe that's because I just don't pay enough attention to Kentucky. But like, everyone knew who Trae Young was. Everyone knew who, I know they were a little different, but, you know, Markel Fultz and Ben Simmons. So
I always think of Michael Beasley.
Yeah.
When he was at Kansas.
That's fair.
As an example. Durant really was kind of the same at the time. I don't think Texas was a powerhouse program necessarily when he committed there, and came in one and done and was a household name by the time he left, but those guys were all like, weren't we talking about guys who were like the number one pick in the draft too?
Right.
Though, right?
No, exactly.
So it's not a guarantee when you're that guy that you're going to, that you're going to pan out. So I don't know. I think it's interesting.
Well, it is. And I think it'll be interesting to see how Michigan proceeds because it's very clear based on who they're offering these scholarships to. The Michigan name is moving a little bit more with the 2019 class than 18, 17, 16, and 15. Arguably ever. You look at who they've offered and it's like everyone except Joe Girard, whose dad played for Beeline and averaged and Girard himself averaged 50 points a game this year. Everyone else that they've offered is a top 60 recruit. So, and everyone else that they're targeting is like a 5-star. So they, I'll be curious to see, cause you're right. I mean, they could theoretically say, okay, Matthews, we'll go pro, and we'll have one other player transfer, and then we'll have 3 5-star recruits in our 2019 class. I mean, you could be, it's a little more cutthroat than I think Beeline wants to be, but at the same time, you could have 3 potential, 5-star, one-and-done NBA-caliber players on your team combined with the players that are developing in the locker room every year. I don't know. It's an interesting time to follow Michigan basketball because – I think they're on the cusp of becoming that blue blood because the wins are there, the tournament wins are there, the conference contention is there. I mean, they're really probably a year or two away from all of a sudden being at maybe, one of those other schools, Indiana at its peak, Michigan State at its peak, Duke, UNC, Kansas, maybe. I mean, we'll see how things go, but it seems like they're trending toward that and they're a step or two away.
I agree. I think consistently recruiting at an elite level was kind of the last step because the track record of development has been a given at this point for how long, right? I mean, you can almost bank on an under-recruited guy making it in the NBA, an under-recruited guy that Beeline finds making it in the NBA, right? So I think taking that next step on the recruiting trail while still sprinkling in those same project is too, not the right word, but you know what I mean? The guys, the development guys,
the guys still, Michigan has won a few titles with. So,
right. Exactly. Yeah. The secret sauce or whatever you want to call it, that Beeline has there. So, I agree. I think they're really, it might be more of an exciting time to be a Michigan basketball fan than it was even when they made the run last time, just because it feels like the foundation is even more solid now for them to, like you said, to do this year in and year out.
Yeah. The one thing I would be curious about is because I can change my opinion, but I'm kind of looking at the next few years and I don't know how much longer Beeline's going to coach. And,
That's
we can,
wild card.
Yeah, we can speculate that, someone like Saadi Washington or someone like Laval Jordan or maybe even Patrick Beal, we can speculate that someone's a coach in waiting or whatever. And Ward Manuel did say, and Beeline said it too, stay tuned. It sounds like there'll be a restructured contract that includes an extension and a raise. So that's where I'm kind of like, okay, is this, a last hurrah, or is it the start of a really transcendent decade of basketball? So that's the wild card. I would imagine, Michigan's probably has a plan. I don't think Beeline's just walking around oh, I'll probably just coach until I drop. I think he's really right, thinking about his future. So we'll see, but man, to be this far in on two of their top 5 recruits ever under Beeline. And then to also have rumblings of McDaniels being interested. And we've heard that before. I think Simi Shitu, the 5-star that went to Vanderbilt, he was interested. Moses Brown was, the number 2 or whatever overall recruit last year. He was interested. So I'm always waiting to see if they visit. And if they visit, then there's a little bit more interest there.
Sure, absolutely.
Although I think those guys visited too, so maybe not. But regardless, you know, we'll see. But Carton and Wilson are heavily interested. And then other guys are interested. Yeah, Wilson, 90% of the crystal ball has him going to Michigan. Carton, 75%. Interestingly, Rocket Watts, 50% of his picks. And then if you look at some of their other offers, I mean, it's amazing that like the top 50, there's top 50 recruits that are like kind of the, I don't know if it's the right word, but like a backup plan almost. You know, I mean, they've got offers extended to Romeo Weems, 37th. They've got offers extended to Joe Girard. I mentioned him. Vernon Carey's, you know, that was just kind of a shot in the dark. He's the number 2 overall recruit. Keon Brooks, pretty heavy Michigan State lean right now. But, you know, he's 23 overall. Rocket Watts, 51 overall. So, like, they're being picky. And so far it's working that they're moving the needle with some of these guys. So, someone asked, Kobe Chackett said, what are the odds with Jaden McDaniels? He's kind of they've definitely like visited him and watched him during this evaluation. Not this one. They're in a dead period right now, but in April they were looking at him. I think it's one of those things where I think they want to see if he's still interested in June and July, because he's going to get a lot of offers, obviously, and he's already gotten a ton, and you know, the other schools are going to swoop in, and it's not like when a Villanova offered Eli Brooks or someone, it's not like a late offer here. These are like, you know, Kentucky, Duke, UNC, they're all going to be going after McDaniels hard. So I'd say right now, probably pretty low, but at the same time, if, you know, in June and July and Michigan's one of the top schools and, you know, he visits, gets an offer, well, then maybe he is really looking at this with an eye toward coming to Michigan, regardless of the situation. And as you said, if that happens, it would be foolish and very unprecedented for any school like Michigan to keep that door closed or whatever. Yeah. So
I don't think it would ever happen.
No. I mean, you know, not to be blunt, but you can look at the bottom of Michigan's bench right now and pick a few players that Michigan would say, we would like you to transfer,
give them the firm handshake.
Yeah.
You know,
and honestly, I mean, you know, someone like A.B. Watson, you know, I don't think he was shown the door by Michigan. I think Michigan was like, well, here's our depth chart for next year. And he said, well, I'd rather, you know, play for Dayton, get more shots up, play more. You know, if you're not going to, and I certainly would think that way too. You know, if I'm unlikely to make the NBA, I'm going to have as much fun in college as possible. And it's not like, you know, Dayton's an uncompetitive school. Like, you can, if he can go be a starter there or a key contributor there and make the NCAA tournament, you know, that's more power to him. So it can get complicated, but honestly, I mean, you know, Michigan wants to be its best team. Players want to play. The path to success is very feasible. As far as football recruiting, since we haven't had you in a month, we haven't had the podcast in a month, what should we know about recruiting? I guess we got some questions. Trying to figure out which ones are solid. MJB Matt 0509 MJB 0509 says, does Steve think they have properly addressed recruiting quote unquote issues this offseason with the hires, earlier local evaluations, so on and so on? So with that question in mind, what are some things that I know you were gone for some of it, but what have you noticed about recruiting in the past month?
I mean, nothing like new that I've like noticed as far as like trends or anything like that. This is kind of one of those, it's going to be an interesting period of the year now because of the new official visits. I think, you know, they had one weekend or so where they had guys up or maybe a couple.
Wasn't it when they were supposed to have the spring game?
When they got a commitment that weekend from the now ranked, he's ranked, Tecori Couch is now the 247th ranked player in the country according to the composite. So people can no longer complain that Michigan has not gotten a prospect within the top 247 in the last, you know, whatever the thing is.
Yeah.
You know, and then, to add on to that, too, all three of Cade McNamara, Trent Jones, and Carson Barnhart have had excellent off seasons at various, the unpadded camps All three of them have. I would suspect that all three of those guys will see bumps of some sort in the coming weeks or months. So Barnhart being a guy that I know Alan True has had his eyes on for a long time, wanted to see him in person, and I know he impressed. So, you know, I think Barnhart's probably a safe four-star candidate at this point. The other two, McNamara and Jones, are already four stars in the composite. So, you know, those guys, I think you'll see a little bit of a bump. We'll see how far, how high. I know the same thing too, like, you know, with Gabe Newberg and Jack Stewart. Gabe Newberg's a guy I know Bill Green, our Ohio guy, I guess, yep, is the best way to put him, as kind of the king of like Ohio evaluators, said that, you know, his grade was based off of a game that he watched him play where it was like a mud bath. It was a mud bowl. Mm. You know, and said they didn't really get a good evaluation on him. So he's another guy that could really rise. And then Jack Stewart, I mean, we'll see there. You know, on Connecticut, I don't expect anybody to get out there to see him live and give him a fair shake evaluation wise. So, you know, whether he'll rise or not, it'd have to be his ranking will eventually be determined by just how impressive his senior film is. Cause like I said, I don't expect anybody to get out there to watch him in person, at least any of our evaluators. So, I'd be surprised. So, yeah, I mean, yeah. So you got a bunch of guys trending up in that regard. I want to say something. I thought when I got back from vacation, did some perusing, that it sounds like Heron won the MVP at one of the rivals camps, you know, so that's good. And I know, I think he talked to Josh Newkirk, re-solidified his commitment there. We'll see. I expect Stanford to still kind of be a factor there. But
now, is Georgia really a factor? Because I thought I had read somewhere. I'm like the worst kind of recruiting Hinton fan. Because you're right.
Hinton. Yeah, Hinton, Heron. Yeah, no. But I don't.
Like I said, worst kind of recruiting follower in the world.
No, you're good. It's fine. I would not say that Georgia is a factor. I would just say that they're probably just continuing to recruit him. With Hinton. I think I'd be surprised if Chris didn't stick in the long run. It would take something pretty drastic, I feel like. You know, I don't know. I mean, I guess never say never. We've been down this road a million times now, and we've seen what can happen. But I think he's probably one of the more solid guys that they have on board right now, I would assume. And that's, you know, Rumler's rock solid, McNamara, Barnhart, Newberg, Stewart, obviously. So Stewart actually just picked up an offer from Auburn also, which is noteworthy too. It's like a, you know, big program, SEC program. So anyway, the grand scheme of things, hosting some visitors next month. They're on the road right now. On the road pretty much translates to they're visiting all of the players that we have listed as top targets on the targets page.
Yeah.
And then also, you know, going through making a bunch of offers. I knew when I went on vacation that I would come back and they offered like 40 or 50 kids while I was on vacation. So, been playing a little bit of catch up there, but it's basically we're setting the foundation for the summer run with the official visits and leading into the season, you know, and it's just kind of the same deal as, you know, once they get a kid up for the official, then they'll know whether or not worth pushing further for, or if they move down the board a little bit more. So,
yeah,
you know, like I said, I'm still interested to see the dynamics because, you know, like Clemson, I want to say Georgia, Clemson, Miami, I'm not sure about some of the other schools down there. None of them are hosting any official visitors this off season. They're all waiting until the fall. And I think this thing has turned into another deal where it's going to end up being an advantage to those Southern programs because
they get last shot.
Yeah. I mean, you know, they'll basically be telling these kids, like, it's one of two things. They have two things. One, you take those, let's just say those three schools, for instance, like Clemson, Miami, Georgia, right? There's already a massive concentration of talent in those areas. So let's just use Hinton as an example, just because he lives just outside of Atlanta. He could drive to any of those three schools pretty much for an unofficial, whether it was during the season or not, right? Mm-hmm. So he doesn't have to use one of his five to Georgia or to Clemson or to Miami. But a kid in another kid in Norcross, Georgia, may want to use one of those five to Michigan. And he may decide that the best time to take that trip, because he's had 50 coaches blowing him up for 6 months, the best time to take that visit is in May or June. So if you're Clemson, Georgia, or Miami, you think, good, he's seen Michigan, he probably liked it, but now, from now until the day he signs,
he's not going to be there.
Can drive over and see. Yeah, he can drive over and see us anytime, but he's going to have to pay out of pocket, you know, to go up to Michigan at all, if he goes up there again at all, right? And so there's a lot of the logistics where the warm weather, high population, you know, the same areas that every school across the country is hit, Southern California, Dallas and Houston, you know, like I said, Miami, Orlando, Atlanta, like all those areas like are by like a bunch of different powerhouse schools that, you know, like a kid from LA, you know, it's the same idea with like with SC and UCLA. It's like they could go to every home game if they wanted to unofficially, you know? And so it's like, Michigan, I think one of the challenges is going to be is like, do they push for a kid to take an official in the spring?
Well, yeah, I was going to say, can they straight up tell a kid like, no, we'd rather have you visit on a game day? Is there a way to do that without burning a bridge?
Well, that's the thing is like, I assume that I think it's just like anything else with this, it's going to be a case by case type thing where it's like they're going to have, like, for instance, like, you know, when Tecori Couch committed, I know our Miami, Andrew Ivins, our Miami, he barely batted an eyelid. He's like, oh, Miami, they don't care. Like, he's right in our backyard. Like, they can just keep recruiting him. One matter of fact, his teammate, Keontra Smith, just flipped from Kentucky to Miami. So now he has a teammate who's also going to play at Miami, or is going to play at Miami, you know? And so, but when I dug around about it, the explanation to me about, well, you know, is it almost a bad thing to get a commitment from Couch now because he's going to have to, you know, like we said, pay his way to come back up, or, you know, he already took his official. And basically the explanation I was given is that it's you have to know the kid, the family, you know, that type of, you know, it's a case by case type basis.
Yeah. Cause say. Some, so, okay. I get what you're saying. Cause like if someone who,
no, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say someone who's like half interested, like 1 foot is interested, kind of intrigued by Michigan, you probably want them to visit in the fall. Whereas someone who's like actually intrigued is actually going to listen when Michigan calls them up in November and, you know, talks up next year or whatever. Those people you might want to have visit in the spring or summer.
Right. So, okay. And there's just, you know, there are families with means. So that's always, I mean, now granted, we know covering recruiting as long as I have, that's not like, it's probably less the case than it is less likely that that's the case, but there are families with means too, that they could have host them for an official in the spring and it wouldn't be a problem for him to fly back up. You know, well, Hinton's probably a good example. I mean, his dad played in the NFL for 15 years. So I would assume like for him traveling back and forth, Ann Arbor, not that big a deal. Right. So, but for other guys, it's not. So it's like I'm saying, what I'm getting at is that it is, there's just a lot of factors that how they kind of have to approach it, you know, with different guys. So I suspect that if a kid's interested, if it's an elite kid and they're interested in taking an official, they'll take it whenever. They're not going to tell an elite, a five-star kid, if he wants to come up in the spring or in the summer, in June, they're not going to say no. Especially because, you know, like, I mean, we're kind of rambling here a little bit, but you also have the idea that a lot of these kids want to make a verbal sooner. And that's one of the other products of this early official visit process. I think you're going to see a lot of kids commit to schools in June, May and June, the rest of this month and in June. You know, once guys get on a few different campuses and stuff, you know, the process remains as taxing as it's ever been for these kids. So, that gives them an advantage. Like I said, you know, like Michigan's got Couch committed verbally, but that gives them an advantage, obviously. Right. I mean, he'd have to flip again. He already flipped once, you know, he was soft commit to Tennessee when he flipped to Michigan. You know, so interesting stuff. I mean, that's really where it's at right now.
Yeah.
I assume
we got a question.
Yeah.
Well, is there more? Are there more updates?
No, I mean, you know, they'll have we'll record again well before there's like more. You know, like I said, there's one big visit weekend coming up in June, but I don't really want to touch it right now because it's so far away.
Yeah, fair enough. Well, hopefully, we are done with our vacations and we will not be going monthly. We'll be going weekly from here on out. But real quick, you got a question. This one comes from Swan Flu, who says, can you list all the things you care less about than stars? He wants us to do a Dr. Cox kind of rant from Scrubs. We are not that clever. If we were, we would probably be trying our chops at acting instead of podcasting. But we could do like a quick lightning deal because you were mentioning these players are already rising. They're already getting more stars. And there's some pretty obvious variables that go into whether or not players because, I mean, look at some of the three stars Harbaugh has turned into NFL players or has turned into key starters for Michigan. So I don't know. I mean, for me, like you love like geography is significant.
I think it plays a role.
What?
Yeah. I think it plays a role.
Yeah. And also I think how can someone look at the evaluations? Like if there's not that many evaluations on a three-star guy, I guess what sort of things should they look at if they're like, oh, a three-star, is he actually going to be is he actually like someone they have as their plan A or is he a backup option? I guess what sort of things do you look at in addition to location?
I mean, if it's Michigan, I look at when they offered the guy. Like a great example of this is DJ Turner, who they're trending for, the three-star cornerback out of Georgia, who they're trending for in the crystal ball. He'll be on campus next month for that day that I don't feel like talking about right now. And, you know, Michigan was – he was one of the first cornerbacks that Michigan offered in the 2019 cycle. And it's very – really, it's interesting. I mean, I have a crystal ball in for Michigan. I had one in, like, a few weeks ago, but I forgot to actually put it in, so it's not in yet. So I still have to put it in, if that makes any sense at all. Yeah. But, you know, it's very similar to the Green Twins last cycle, who were both offered very early. They were evaluated and offered very early, and Michigan stayed on them, got the commitments from them in April of last year, kept them, signed them, and everything. Where it's like, particularly defensively, I just have a hard time with anybody who doesn't like give these coaches or this staff the benefit of the doubt if it's a three-star versus a four-star prospect. You know, granted, we're seeing it, you know, that Jordan Lewis is in the pros. He was a four-star. Hill and Long were both four-star guys, right? So I get that. Hill and Long were both very highly regarded. But they also know the traits that helped get those two recruited at a high level. I think it was good shuttle times. They weren't as tall as some of the guys they've recruited more recently, but still kind of had long arms and had the length, you know, to make plays on the ball, that type of stuff. But to me, it's always, almost always about when they offered and whether or not they'll take the verbal, because that matters too. And I know there are people that like whine about that they can change their mind, which they can, but they've also kind of stepped back from doing it the way they did the first couple cycles under Harbaugh, where I think it was 16 when like five or six guys that were committed ended up elsewhere, but not by just decommitting, but basically because Michigan accepted a verbal and then kind of cooled off on them. And
well, yeah, I think it was 16 when they were on all these satellite camps. I think a lot of those players committed in June.
Yes.
And it was kind of like,
it was a satellite. That's right.
And then they kind of had to be like, okay, but let's pump the brakes a little bit. Kind of a weird year for recruiting.
Weaver. Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, but they still signed in one of their best classes ever. Right. So, but yeah, like Rashad, I think of Rashad Weaver, there was the whole Swenson deal. Antoine Richardson. I'm trying to think of who else might actually be able to click. Oh, that's right. We have you can look up decommitments by cycle for Michigan. Let me, sorry. I'm
yeah, there you go. Here. The Swenson one still remains like the most overblown story. Like, yeah, the Swenson one, like it had never happened in the history of college football before.
Mind-numbingly stupid. Like that. Well, no, Michigan handled that situation totally fine. So we have, holy cow. So they had 11 decommitments in the 2016 cycle, right? So that's what I say is like it used to be something I think was like a problem for them. That's too many. Like that's, you're getting, you know, so Jordan Elliott, you know, that one was a weird one. I mean, he literally, I think he made 6 verbal commitments in his recruitment, and he's already transferred from Texas. So that kind of turned out the way we thought it would.
So he's up to 7. Devery
Hamilton flipped to Stanford, which was a loss and unexpected. We talked about Swenson. David Reese, they cooled on him. Vic Viramontes, that was kind of a weird situation. I feel like they actually went back and forth on him at the very last second before signing day, and then did not send him a letter of intent. Matt Falcon, they cooled there. Keontae Enos, they cooled there. He got into some big trouble. He's not even playing college football, so that was one that was good thing they got disassociated themselves with him. Sir Patrick Scott, they cooled on him. Daley Harding, they cooled on him. I think Harding was a carryover from the Hoke staff. Antoine Richardson, they cooled on him. And then Rashad Weaver was the true satellite camp guy that they offered at the satellite camp. And he might not have committed right away. But either way, so what I'm saying is that they'd shown this really bad tendency of taking a ton of verbals that they shouldn't have and then backing out of them. And I think it made them look pretty – it's not a great look when you're doing it consistently. So they've cut down on that, you know. When you look at 18, and you got Reese, which was a loss, Ekior, which was a loss ish. And then besides that, so they had 6, but those two were like guys that they would have kept. There's the Dunbar, the kid, 2 from Ohio, Leonard Taylor and Antoine Johnson, that they cooled on. Doyle was what we've always talked about, more of a product of, I think, Milton showing up on campus and just blowing them away. I don't think they felt like they needed 2 in 18 after that.
Yeah.
And then Irvin, I think, was kind of a cool too, although he ended up at Auburn. I mean, you know, he ended up with a decent recruiting profile. So, you know, they've cut it down, and that's why I say, like, if they're willing to take a guy, I think there has to be some form of trust, you know, in what they're doing. I looked at, we posted about Devin Bush being touted now as an NFL prospect, and I took note of the one paragraph from, I think it was Chase Goodbread at NFL.com, mentioning that Bush is the prototype for what the NFL is looking for at the linebacker position now as a prototype. And you remember that when he was recruited by Michigan, he was ranked a 3-star, because he was too short, and he wasn't, you know, he was fast, but he was too short. And it's like, you know, and, you know, I think Michigan would laugh, like, at the time even, because I think they knew, like, the game of football changes, and I think they see where it's changing, you know, and I think that part of their recruiting evaluations reflect that, you know. And so, like I said, you look at all the tall, lengthy, lanky defensive backs they've taken in the last couple cycles, for instance, you know, that type of stuff. Offensive line, there's the tweet by, I think somebody ended up posting on our board, Charles Power, who used to do a great job covering Alabama for us, noted that the, was it 10 of the, some, the basically the average, average high school measurement of offensive tackles drafted in the NFL draft this year was 6'6", 282. You know, whereas if you look at the rankings right now, a lot of the top guys are like maxed out style, like physically, so that they go into a camp right now and they just obliterate everybody because they're usually taller, bigger. Not to pick on like a Xavier Truss, though, is a good example. It's like 6'7.5", 340. He's probably going to do a better job at moving people right now than Jack Stewart, who's 6'5", 280, right? So there's long-term projection, or Carson Barnhart, 6'4", 282. You know, there's long-term projection at some of these positions, too, that go into it, right? So as far as, like, you know, you look at Carson, or you look at a Jack Stewart and think, man, 6'5", 280, he's kind of small, kind of undersized. But they look at it and think, okay, this guy is 6'5", 280. They've gotten him in person. They've measured him. They've seen his body. Okay, we can definitely get this guy to, you know, 305 or whatever by his sophomore season. You know, you get what I'm saying? So
yeah,
it's just a lot. I mean, it'd be something that we'd probably be better off, like, maybe trying to find someone to interview for, just to get, like, actual insight. But from my standpoint, there's tendencies, there's different, you know, like I said, the lateral movement at cornerback is big, the shuttle times. I know that's what got Benjamin St. Juice recruited, was he was incredible, put on an incredible shuttle time for a guy that was like six, that measured at 6'3.5", when Michigan offered him. You remember, he's a guy that had no offers. He was not even, didn't even have a recruiting profile when Michigan offered him, yeah. And then Barton ended up ranking him in the top 100 because of the same traits that Michigan saw at camp, you know. So there's a lot to it, obviously. Like I said, we just went on rambling about it for a long time, but there's a lot to it. Michigan's not recruiting perfectly. I don't think anybody would say that at all, but I don't think it's definitely not nearly as dire as what, you know, the same olds will say every time something happens on the trail, right?
Right. Well, and I think people who actually read up on recruiting and aren't, like, are normal, I think they see a lot of this stuff. Because, again, it's like, you know, Sean McCune's a great example, too. And you talk about Devin Bush. Sean McCune had the fastest, you know, 40 time among tight ends in his recruiting cycle. They jumped on him quickly as soon as they saw him. Or was he the guy they were holding out on?
They did a little bit, but it's kind of funny is that it's the same thing they did with Schoonmaker.
Yeah.
In 18. Is this almost the exact same deal? I mean, the day he, like, Schoonmaker, that's a funny story. Day he committed to Michigan, I think our Maryland guy, I think Ahmed, gave me a heads up. He's like, you ever heard of this guy? And I said, no. And I looked, and I don't even remember if he had a profile or not. I think he might have.
I think he did.
What?
If I remember.
Yeah, it wasn't ranked, though, but he only had like one or two schools even on it. I don't know if there were any even offers reported. Got a hold of him, said, hey, heard that there was some interest in Michigan, or if you're in, you know, whatever. And he said, well, actually, I'm committing tonight. And I said, oh. And I'm thinking, wow, this, like, never happens nowadays. Like, this is like a golden goose to find a kid who, you know. So I asked around to make sure it was legit, and I was told, yeah, he's a take. Michigan wants him. You know, it's legit. They had offered him. He never reported the offer publicly, and he committed that night. And it worked out a lot the same as McCune, where, yeah, they didn't want. Like, with McCune, they didn't, like, Schoonmaker just didn't report his offer. McCune, they kind of held off offering him for just a little bit.
As soon as he reported an offer, everyone was going to start looking at his film from other schools. So that was the idea, right?
Or his stats, or those numbers that what got him noticed in the first place, you know? And so, I mean, these colleges, it's a measurements game. I mean, we go to the Army Combine every year, and every year at the Army Combine, I'd probably say a good 20 end up in the top 100, you know, and that's just the Army Combine, right? I mean, a lot of times the kids who are already, because that's usually sophomores and juniors that are mostly comprise that group, you know, the ones that were just beginning to rank. But there will already be the guys that are already being recruited heavily who are legit that won't be there, you know. So you're talking about there's already kind of an established core but you'll go there and then there'll be about 20 kids. I think of like Luke Ford last cycle. I think he signed with Georgia, a tight end guy that was a nobody before he went to that combine, came out of the combine. I mean, we ranked him in the top 100 immediately, and he ended up, I think, probably all in all, probably was the most heavily recruited tight end in the country as far as like how many different schools got involved there. So, you know, there's the measurements part of it and stuff too. And I don't know, it's a fascinating topic really, but takeaway is, like I said, Michigan not recruiting perfectly. I think they've found themselves in some weird, the more I've thought about it, they've kind of been finding themselves in like a weird middle spot where like Michigan's a great academic program, but I don't know if they could outpitch Stanford, let's say, academically.
I don't think so.
You know, and so, and maybe even Notre Dame the same way. And then on the flip side, you see them, they're in battles. You look at like the guys like Quavarrus Crouch or John Emery Jr. or let's see who else, DeLoach, who they're seeing today, you know, or, you know, these other guys where they're taking on sort of the classic, you know, Florida State, Georgia, Clemson, you know, Ohio State, like, you know, the schools that have, you know, are their foundation's more solid on the football end, right? And Michigan, so it's weird as I kind of feel like in a way Michigan's sort of stuck in the middle right now because, you know, like I said, you talk about Stanford, they're fighting Stanford and Notre Dame for like a bunch of guys. You know, you got Cornelius Johnson, wide receiver, who probably is probably the top wide receiver target right now. DeCosmo, who I think Stanford, that was one thing that happened when I was on vacation. Stanford leads the Crystal Ball there now. I think Michigan's still definitely in that one though. Luke Deal, Notre Dame. I mean, Michigan's actually had a ton of head-to-heads with Notre Dame this cycle for some reason. You know what I mean, though? So it's like, I think there's that, too, where there's just kind of like some weird...
Yeah.
Where it's like Michigan offers everything. Like, right now, Michigan is... We'll say they're good at everything, but they're not great at anything, at least when in the within the context of, like, a set. Like I said, you're competing academically against Stanford, per se, you know, and again, we just got done talking, you know, Heron is considered, one of their verbals is considering Stanford. Cornelius Johnson was just on Stanford's campus. Miles Hinton, who's not a 2019, but a 2020, Chris Hinton's younger brother, five-star lineman. I think Stanford's probably Michigan's primary competition there, you know, and so it's like, because Michigan loves the academic type kids. Those are the kind of kids that they want to bring in. They have the ability on the field and off the field, the cerebral, you know, that's the how Harbaugh built what he did at Stanford. So, you know, it's just, I think some interesting developments in that regard, I guess. But overall, again, I don't think it's nearly as dire as what people think.
Yeah.
I mean, it's when you're in the long haul of the process, you know, like I said, we talk about Crouch, Daxton Hill, Lewis Cine, Kyle Ford, Zach Harrison. I mean, these are guys that it's, you know, Michigan, people just condition themselves to believe that Michigan is never going to win any of these battles, even though really 16 and 17 specifically, and 18 really with Muhammad and a couple other guys, you know, they've won a healthy amount of the battles for the guys that they want the most. So, you know, we'll have to see. And again, I think how the season plays out will always be a factor. I mean, that's, only said that about a billion times now, but yeah. So.
Well, this is a pivotal one too, because like there's all the negative recruiting narratives that, you know, Harbaugh couldn't do it with his guy. I mean, it's all, you know how I feel about these these tropes, and obviously Michigan fans have their opinions too. But like oh, third in the Big Ten East, can't win a big game. Well, if they do it this year, then they're gonna have less negative recruiting in all those recruits' ears. So.
Right, right.
Yeah.
No, it definitely matters.
Being a top 10 team is significant. No one, you know, because you talk about Stanford, Notre Dame. Well, over the past 5 years, they have been better football teams than Michigan has.
Right.
So
both being a top 10 team in December matters. Being a top 10 team in September doesn't matter very much at the end of the day.
Right. And frankly, Michigan has had two seasons where they finished in the top 15. They were 12th in 2015, 10th in 2016. Every other year, they've been outside the top 25 in the last 5 years. So,
weren't they number one team in the country in 16 at one point?
They were.
Or were they number two?
But I'm saying where they finished. They were number two.
Right. They got to, was number two the highest they ever got in the polls?
Yeah.
In 16?
Yeah.
Okay, that's what I thought. When they lost to Iowa, they were the number two team in the country. Is that right?
Yep.
That's okay,
and they would have been number one
if they'd won that game.
Yeah.
That's what I thought. Okay. Yeah. Yep.
Crazy. Anyway, we are going to talk more about the current football team all summer. Next week, someone asked about projected starters. We're not going to necessarily do projected starters, but we will break down position by position, because one thing that I found really intriguing is comparing this team to the 2016 team. And there are some differences, there are some gaps, but I think you can make a pretty strong case that this team looks like it will be better than the 2016 team. We're going to break that down next week, though, because Steve and I were talking before the show. We want to do, it's 100 days until college football returns in games, and we want to break down, do you want to do the Big Ten? Big Ten power rankings?
Yes.
All right. So 14, 13, 12, 11, I have Illinois. There's like nothing going for them. They're going to start you want to talk about stars. I mean, this is like low three-star true freshman quarterback is their quarterback next year. Rutgers has Arthur Sitkowski at quarterback. He's projected to be their guy. And then they'll have like a better offensive line and a better defense, but I still think they're pretty close to the cellar. I have Minnesota 12. Vic Viramontes might be their quarterback, if you want to talk about some former targets. And then I just think that they, I don't know, man. I don't know if Minnesota has much going for them right now. I think they had a couple good recruits in PJ Fleck's first full class, but I don't think it's going to translate to much. Indiana, I think they're trending the wrong way. As much as I hate someone like Kevin Wilson and the way he coached and his approach, he was pretty good at getting results out of Indiana. So maybe Peyton Ramsey, Morgan Ellison. I mean, that's a good offensive start, but it just seems like, I mean, they lost Tigray Scales. I don't think they're replacing him with anybody of note. So that's my bottom four. How's that sit with you?
Those are your bottom four. So your bottom four were Illinois, Minnesota, Indiana, and Rutgers.
Yeah. So
not in that order. I'm just
right,
the four.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Indiana, Minnesota seems like they could be better, because like they're generally okay.
Of those four teams, I think Minnesota is the one that has the best chance to, you know. Flex actually recruited relatively well so far for them.
Oh, absolutely. But
I think Minnesota, much like Illinois, well, I guess it's hard to, you know, the thing is, though, is what did Minnesota won 9 or 10 games when Clay's left?
Yeah.
Right? Like they. So,
it was
so
a Minnesota, soft nine wins, though. Very
right,
soft.
But,
yeah.
But Minnesota's used to winning. They're used to competing at least for bowls. They've never been a division contender per se, but they're not usually the bottom feeder either, you know.
Right.
And so
I remember they had an NFL ish caliber quarterback.
True. Are you talking about Leidner?
Yeah, they don't have anything like that right now.
I know.
I mean, it really might be Victor.
Yeah, Viramontes. I know. I noticed that too. You know, we just got done talking about him decommitting from Michigan, but yeah, I mean, those would probably have to be my bottom four as well. You know, and the whole thing is, like, it's so, like, the whole Illinois, like, that program was in such shambles. Like Lovie Smith, like, I don't care who you are, it's going to take at least 5 years to get that program back on its feet.
Yeah, you, like, could be Nick Saban. You'd still need a couple years.
Right, and it's like, I'm just interested to see, because there were people, I think even on our board, that were like, you know, if Illinois has another bad season, like he needs to, like they should probably move on. And it's like, why? So that they'll just be perpetually,
yeah,
you know, rebuilding, you know. And it's like Illinois has finally started to do some of the smart things on the recruiting trail. I mean, they got the kids at Trinity Catholic. Well, they got Isaiah Williams. They'll probably get, they'll at least be a factor for Shimon Cooper, I would assume so, and probably some of the younger guys there. So, you know, they're finally, well, they got, what's his name, Beeson, too, out of Dallas. Like, Illinois has two top 100 commitments right now. So, like, they're doing something. It's just, it's going to take time, you know, and I get annoyed when these, like, you know, these, it's like, was in the NBA or in Major League Baseball when you just look at a roster on paper and it's like, you know that this team's never going to win.
Yeah.
They fire the manager. It's like the managers you can only do so much of what's handed to you. So I think that's where Illinois is at right now, but I agree. Those are probably the bottom four for me.
Yeah. As far as safely, the next two, because I think I'm pretty confident in my bottom six, and then then things get a little murkier. But my next two, I have Purdue at 10. They lost their, I mean, they have Sindelar at quarterback, but I don't think he was necessarily their main guy. Apparently they have Herdman back still, and DJ Knox is around still. Is this an old depth chart?
Yeah.
But regardless, I don't think they're going to be quite what they were last year. I also think that they're going to have a tougher schedule. So I think they're 10. I just don't think I think that roster was a little bit more equipped than people gave him credit for in Brohm's first year. And then I have Maryland. I still don't have them very high, but I do think they'll be the best of the so-called bad teams with a healthy quarterback. And we saw, I mean, they beat Texas on the road last year. So, you know,
really could have blown them out if Pegram got hurt, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And so their backup quarterback beat Texas on the road. So maybe I'm wrong. Texas ended up not being very good, but I mean, they might be one of those teams that nobody wants to go to college. Not nobody wants to go to College Park. People are annoyed that they have to go to College Park, kind of like what Indiana was a couple years ago.
Sure.
Where teams are like, ugh, this is like the worst ugly game ever. So I don't know. I have Purdue 10, Maryland 9, Nebraska 8. Are you roughly in that group too, or do you have someone else lower?
I think Purdue is the one program. I could see Purdue finishing second in the West.
Really?
I don't think, you said I don't think their schedule's that, like, it'll be really interesting for them if they come out and beat Northwestern to begin the season. Then they get Eastern.
Yes,
Michigan.
That would change everything. If they're better than Northwestern.
Yeah.
Then yeah.
Well, I think that's very feasible though. I think Northwestern's kind of due for a slight slide. I don't think they're going to be bad, but I don't know if they're going to win 10 games again next year.
Sure.
Then they get Eastern Michigan, Missouri, and Boston College all at home. Then they get Nebraska and Illinois on the road to open up. Well, they open up Big Ten play against Northwestern, but you know, to open the real conference, the actual sustained conference slate. Iowa at home, Minnesota and Indiana on the road. They get Wisconsin at home. They get Ohio State at home.
Yeah, but they're not winning those two games.
No, but they get them at home. I mean, here's the thing. Remember what Michigan had to face in West Lafayette last year, where Purdue was undefeated, weren't they? Or had they lost a game?
They lost to Louisville.
They gave Louisville a great game, though.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to agree on that. I think that for this year specifically, I would say I'll go Maryland, as hard as that is, because I think Maryland's one of those teams that I think is there's about four teams in conference this year. I think that a couple breaks go their way, they could win 9 or 10 games, kind of like what Northwestern did last year, and I think Maryland's one of them. I don't think Nebraska's one of them. I think Nebraska's time is going to be, it's going to take a little bit of work. I think Scott Frost is definitely the guy there, but I don't think it's not going to be a long haul to get back, but this year won't be the year. So
I think I've been drinking the Kool-Aid. Too many of our writers in 24/7's network are too high
Scott
on Scott Frost.
Frost.
Yeah.
Well, no, I think eventually, I think where it's setting up, I think it's setting up for Wisconsin, Nebraska to really kind of take the reins of the West. And then I think maybe one, I don't know who, Iowa, who the hell knows with Iowa? I don't even really know what to ever think about them.
Well, Iowa's got some draft prospects. I have to look up their names so that says what they think. But, like, I feel like they're actually going to be in for a little bit better of a season this year.
Iowa would not be in my, yeah. So my next three were Nebraska, Maryland.
Wow, so you had Purdue sixth?
I don't know. I know, I think you get in the middle here, it gets a little bit, I'll say that the next three were Nebraska, Maryland, and Purdue, but Purdue's at the top of that list, in my opinion.
Okay. There,
and then Northwestern would be my next.
Okay. Yeah, because I have Iowa 7, Northwestern 6.
I would reverse those.
Even with Thorson with Northwestern?
Yeah.
Could you imagine if Clayton Thorson was a first-round draft pick, by the way? He's projected to in a few scenarios.
I can't imagine that. You know, I mean, plus is he 100% now?
I don't know.
Did he hurt his knee in the bowl game? Either way.
I would imagine he'll be healthy for the season.
Right. It's got to be kind of weird to be an Iowa fan. Like, you just never know what you're going to get. Like, I think the way their season played out last year was, like, just the epitome of being an Iowa fan, where they went 8-5. They beat Ohio State by, what, like, 30?
35. They curb-stomped Ohio State.
Yeah. And then they lost four games. Here it says four. They lost four games by 9 points or less.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like you destroy Ohio State, and then I'm sure a couple of those games, I haven't looked at their schedule, but I'm sure a couple of those games were ones that they, you know, teams they probably should have beaten. So, man, because I tell you what, Iowa's defense should be really good.
And they have, I would think so.
A.J. Epenesa, who was a five-star, was a no-doubter coming out of high school. His dad played at Iowa. That's really the reason Iowa got him. I want to say it's the first five-star Iowa signed, like, ever, just about. So, but they lose Wadley. They lose James Daniels, who I thought was quietly one of the two or three best offensive linemen in the Big Ten last year. So, I would flip those. I have Northwestern 7, Iowa 6.
Okay. Well, yeah, because, I mean, with Nate Stanley, Nick Easley, I liked Nielsen. I feel like I saw him. I feel like I liked him. I can't remember actually now, but I don't know. I feel like they're going to be an 8-ish win team, especially in the West. And then, okay, so our top five, we have the same five teams as the rest of the country in the top five of the Big Ten, just the order. I went 5-4. I went Penn State 5, Michigan State 4. Penn State, previewing them is basically how much do you think that was Joe Moorhead, Deshaun Hamilton, Mike Gesicki, and Saquon Barkley? How much of it was
a certain running back
that went number two overall, probably could have had a Heisman case. Yeah. So I just feel like, and plus they lose 8 defensive starters, and that's probably more significant than people give them credit for, because that was a solid defense last year. And I mean, I know Michigan did the same thing. So if they have that kind of recruiting and they're that well equipped to get new starters, then maybe they're just fine. But I think that they might lose, you know, to all three of the Michigan State, Ohio States this year, even though they host two of them at home.
Okay, they get Michigan State and Ohio State at home, correct?
Yeah, so right. They might get Michigan State. They might beat them. I think they're going to lose to Ohio State and Michigan, though. I don't know. You know a little bit more about their recruiting. Are they equipped to reload this year, will it take a year?
They brought in a really nice class. I'd have to go back and look at it for sure. I know Justin Shorter was the top receiver prospect in the country, so he's probably a guy that'll play immediately. Micah Parsons, another five-star, probably play like outside linebacker type spot. Again, is he ready day one? I'm not sure.
Well, because that's the thing. It's like Michigan had a lot of top recruits, but they didn't win 10 games last year, you know.
Right, right. So I would probably go – I'm going Penn State 5. I'm going Wisconsin 4, actually.
Wisconsin 4. Wow.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I mean, the more I read about Wisconsin, the more I think that they're ready to go. I mean, they don't – they don't lose much of anything from last year's team. And so, and
I mean, they lose both. They lose, don't they lose? They lose Tindall and on the out, so they lose both their corners, don't they?
They lose both their corners. But
He ended up playing really well against Miami, actually, which was one of the more surprising performances of the bowl season.
I still have no idea how he did it. Yeah.
That's what I'm saying is, like, I just still don't know how much stock I can put into an Alex Hornibrook led team. You know, and Wisconsin's a, you know, good, not a program I think most, like, Michigan fans, I don't think you'd see them actively root against Wisconsin, right? Like they would against, like, Michigan State or Ohio State. I think Wisconsin would be acceptable in most fans' minds to represent the Big Ten, but I just don't know. I think you get to the top, and I think quarterback is where the difference is made. And I just, you know, I don't know. I could be way off here for sure.
Well, I mean, they return their top two receivers, right? And then they have
Danny Davis was, you talk about a breakout. I mean, and that was, he was a true freshman. He might have been the best true freshman receiver in the country, really, if you consider. I mean, didn't he have three touchdown catches against Miami?
Yeah. Well, and they had the something best like true that, freshman right? running back ever.
Right.
So.
Right, yeah.
So, and then, you know, they still got Deiter, projected first-round pick. Bladaz, I don't know how to say any of their names.
David Edwards.
Yeah.
David Edwards, I think, is a definite NFL prospect.
Right.
So. No, you're right. I think that's the thing is, so here's the thing. Like, that's what I was going to say, though, is, you know, Wisconsin could be the best, or they could end up with the best record or the second best record in the conference, but may only be the third or fourth best team. That's where the West, East stuff, like, can matter, you know? And I don't know, who do they avoid this year? I mean, it seems like every year they avoid.
They do have to play Ohio State. Or no, they have to play Penn State.
Let me look it up real quick.
Yeah, because I think. By the way, they get Connolly, they have Edwards, they have Van Ginkle. A lot of names Michigan fans probably remember from last year's game. Dakota Dixon, okay, at safety. So I think
they get Penn State and Michigan on the road. But besides that, the rest of that they get the bottom five teams that we named in the conference.
Yep.
And then they get Iowa, will be on the road. They literally get the bottom half of the conference.
Yeah.
And then Michigan and Penn State. Granted, you could argue, though, really, man, you could argue that they get their five toughest games are all on the road. Iowa, Michigan, Northwestern, Penn State, and Purdue.
Yeah. There might be three losses in there if they're not that good. Yeah, that's. I think really, they'll win those games, some of those games, though.
I mean, Kinnick, we know what the deal is at Kinnick, you know, and then you got to go Michigan, Northwestern, Penn State, you know, that, and then Purdue, which, like I said, I'm high on Purdue. I think Purdue's going to be pretty solid, so that's interesting. So, I don't know. I'm sticking with it, though. Actually, us talking it out makes me feel even a little bit better about it.
I see, this is where things get interesting, because us talking it out made me feel better at Wisconsin at number two. So, I guess we shall see.
Are we at? We're at number three right now, though, right?
Yeah. So I had Michigan State four. So we can talk about Michigan State next. Are they number three for you?
Yeah.
Okay. Disrespect continues for D'Antonio.
I mean, I have them three.
Yeah.
I don't think that's that bad. It's a toss up, though.
Yeah.
Michigan State really similar, actually. Like, they return a bunch of people. I don't know, though. It's hard because they get Michigan, Ohio State at home, both of them. And we know what they've done against Michigan, but they also always play Ohio State really well too. Outside of last year was kind of the exception to the rule.
Mm-hmm. Well, aren't like three of Urban Meyer's like seven or eight losses to Michigan State? Isn't there some stat like that? Yeah.
Yeah, I know. Like, they've done really well in that game, you know, and so I don't know. We'll see. I mean, they didn't lose a ton. It's just the way that they always seem to win games. Just, it never seems to really convince you that it's because they were better. I know that's like the most disrespect thing, but like, you think about like Penn State, they had some like weird fluky weather delay for 2 hours where they got to go in there on their own locker room, and Penn State was like in a, you know, cramped,
right.
You know, like, and that completely changed the complexion of that game. You know, when they came out after that rain delay, the game was a completely different game after that. Or Michigan, where Michigan turns the ball over 5 times, Michigan State wins the turnover battle 5-0, and Michigan still has the ball
with a play to go. Yeah,
2 minutes to go. You know, so it's like, it's just they're Michigan State's always so hard to like figure out. But that being said, history says when D'Antonio has an experienced team that they win. So I don't know. I think I would say this. I think the 3-2 for me for Michigan State is probably closer than it is between any two teams on the list.
Okay. Yeah, I actually have Michigan State 4. I think I'm looking at three teams: Michigan, Wisconsin, Ohio State, that really have elite potential. I know I kind of project what I think is going to happen a little bit more than some people do. And you know, with Michigan State, it wasn't just Michigan and Penn State. I mean, they lost to Northwestern. They barely beat Indiana. If I recall correctly, they only beat Iowa by a possession. It was hardly a, I mean, I get what you mean. Like, they don't look like they're the better team all the time, even if they win all these games. So I don't know if that's not like meant to be shade. I mean, they win the games, and that's an element of football that's probably the most important one. But you know,
here we go.
Oh, go ahead.
20 point loss to Notre Dame. They beat Iowa at home by a touchdown. We talked about Michigan, 5-0 turnover margin. They beat Minnesota by a field goal. I want to say that game came down to the last minute.
I think Minnesota made a really last-ditch comeback, though. Like right, Michigan, okay. It was kind of like when it's saying Michigan only beat Michigan State by 9 when State went 3-9. Like, it's
true.
One of those things.
Indiana, like you said, 8-point game. I think that was a game that...
It was very close.
Yep. Northwestern, they lost to, obviously. Ohio State, the blowout. You know, they only beat Maryland by 10. And that was a Maryland team that at that point was down to, I think, literally their fifth string quarterback.
Yeah, the walk-on.
Right?
Yeah, from Detroit. Yeah.
Yeah, Ryan Brand. So, and then Rutgers, and then they drew one of the best matchups possible in the bowl games with Washington, a heavily overrated Washington State team. So, again, I'm not trying to, really not trying to hate on Michigan State at all. They always squeak by, it feels like, in a lot of these games. So it's always hard to, like, because it feels like every year they play in 5 or 6, like, games that are just right down to the wire. So it's always hard to predict that they're going to win every single one of those games.
Mm-hmm.
Even though, really, we're at the point now where history says, when it is a really close game, that they're going to squeak it out somehow. You know?
Right.
So,
yeah.
I think
this Big Ten is a little bit better. Like, Michigan doesn't have like a very obvious, well, they have one very obvious flaw, but like, you know, like they're not like some questionable team. They're gonna have to play at Nebraska, they're gonna have to play at Penn State, I mean at Maryland, at Indiana, don't speak much, but you know, host Michigan, Ohio State. I think the schedule a little tougher for them this year, because I don't even remember who their crossovers were last year. I mean, I guess Northwestern and Minnesota and
Iowa.
Okay.
Okay. Iowa.
That's a decent crossover.
See, I don't. I mean, they get. Yeah, let me look at. Yeah, I don't know. I don't think their schedules. Their road games in conference. They got Penn State. We'll see about Indiana. But then again, you got Nebraska. Yeah, but I mean, I guess by November, Nebraska could be pretty solid after nearly a full season. You know, that game at Arizona State. Kind of interest, random, but I think that'll be kind of interesting in the off season or the non-conference.
Yeah.
Yeah, it'll be Edwards' first big game, I feel like, as a Arizona State head coach. So
yeah, I just don't buy that hire. I think I would chalk that up as a win for the Spartans.
Yeah, we'll see.
So you have Michigan 2 by a hair. I have them 3 behind Wisconsin. I think we'll talk about Michigan enough on this podcast. Ohio State number 1. Is it even close in your eyes? Because for me, I think there's a pretty sizable gap there.
I don't think it's I wouldn't call it a sizable gap.
Okay.
We don't know. I mean, I think I'll put it this way. I think there's the possibility that it could be a big gap. I think the biggest thing to me is we don't, like, there's the hype's already kind of building for Dwayne Haskins, but we don't know what he's, you know what I mean? Like, I think we could easily be sitting here in October saying, yeah,
fair. Although we saw an awful lot in the Big House last year.
Right.
You know, but, I mean, there's Ohio State fans who think Michigan would have won that game if Barrett hadn't been injured.
I don't know. It's hard to say. I don't know. Ohio State, they get what looks like a pretty, they're Penn State, Michigan State on the road. But again, otherwise it's all.
I think Penn State's a tough one. Michigan State, you know, I know D'Antonio's a fantastic coach, but I don't think that their road atmosphere is that daunting.
I think in certain, and it's a, well, if Michigan's coming into East Lansing, I think it's a pretty, it goes to a different level there. Now, I don't know about when Ohio State comes to town. I think it depends. I think Michigan State, I would call one of those, we'll call them a night game program, where if it's a game, if it is under the lights, I think it gets pretty rowdy in there. But if it's like, you know, yeah, if Ohio State goes East Lansing and the game's a noon kickoff, then yeah, I agree. I don't think it's going to be, you know, it wouldn't be like,
yeah, even when they're winning titles, they don't sell out.
Right, exactly. You know, it wouldn't be like even, I think even Nebraska's a pretty rabid.
Oh, Nebraska's a really tough place, but they have like a 100,000 seat stadium.
Right.
And they go nuts.
And they're always all there.
Yeah.
You know, so.
I mean, Nebraska hosting a Michigan State, Ohio State, Michigan would be the biggest event in the entire state all year.
I agree.
So yeah.
Well,
I remember that
even basketball.
Oh, my gosh.
When Michigan played them on a Tuesday night?
Yeah, and they sold out.
And it sold
17,000
out.
17,000 fans. Yeah.
Yeah. So, props to Nebraska fans.
Yeah.
You definitely can't question their commitment to their program. There's no doubt about it. And we see it on Twitter every day when their fans are tweeting at recruits incessantly to get them to come to their school. They're off topic. They're the worst. They're the worst now. It used to be Tennessee, although Tennessee's gotten bad again with the another new hire. But Nebraska fans just take the cake on Twitter, man. They are just.
Yeah, they'll crawl into my mentions once in a while. I like said something on Inside the Huddle about Nebraska, and someone heard and passed it on to all their friends, and they all started tweeting at me. I was like, gosh, what in the world?
Yeah, no, I mean, it's and that's the thing is, like, really, Nebraska, Michigan aren't really recruiting a lot of the same players right now. So that's where it's always weird when I do see Nebraska pop up, and it's just like a kid will like tweet an offer from Nebraska, and he'll have like literally like 80 mentions, all the same people. Like, here's an edit.
GBR.
Yeah. So.
Or I tweeted out something about like the Big Ten players who are still waiting to hear draft decisions. I accidentally called him James Copeland, and I think I copied it from another list, and all these people started coming to me like, oh, it must suck to not be able to do any research on whether his name's Isaac or not. Not, like, just, like, the most ridiculous. Oh, well. I'm sure.
Well, they got you then.
Yeah, they really schooled me. So, okay, so we have Ohio State 1 consensus. And then you have Michigan, Michigan State, Wisconsin. I have Wisconsin, Michigan, Michigan State. Penn State's our 5. You have Iowa 6. I have Northwestern 6. Then I go Nebraska, Maryland, Purdue, Indiana, Minnesota, Rutgers, Illinois. You go Purdue, and then Nebraska, Maryland, Minnesota.
Purdue, Maryland, Nebraska.
Purdue, Maryland. Oh, you have Nebraska that low? You have them 10?
I don't think they're going to be that good this year.
All right. I mean,
it's one of those things, like with those teams, like I said, I think there's like, I think any of those teams ranked from like 6 to let's say 11, wherever Minnesota is.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty much.
I think
I'd agree with
could
that.
End up, they could end up anywhere within that ranking, I feel like. So it's not necessarily that I'm that low on Nebraska. I just think that the odds are that Nebraska is just, it's first year. Their roster is going to, they're going to undergo a complete overhaul. I just think it's going to be a little bit of a transition year for Frost in the first season.
Yeah. Yeah, I do think Nebraska and Iowa, their floor is higher than 11th. But, I mean, I guess that's, people have said
Dude,
that
Iowa
about teams
could be in the
before.
Rose Bowl for all we know. I mean, that's it. They got, to, they were in the Rose Bowl like 3 years ago. Iowa was like, and it was out of nowhere. So like,
yeah.
Who knows, you know, I just can never, again, they're fascinating to me because I can never figure them out. So.
Yeah. But that's our rankings. Feel free to let us know yours. Feel free to comment on anything we said, especially you Nebraska fans, but also, you know, anything about recruiting, basketball recruiting, baseball has a big series this weekend. Against at Purdue, if they go 2-1, they actually look favorable to make the NCAA tournament for a third time in 4 years. If they go 1-2 or 0-3, they'll have some work to do in the Big Ten tournament. Softball got a very favorable regional draw. You know, they're kind of backing into the tournament. They get outscored by Michigan State and Ohio State by a combined 17-1 over the final two games. So backing in a little bit, but they had a very favorable draw. Kentucky is, I think it's the closest regional host, and so I think there'll be a decent amount of Michigan fans there. And then also, Kentucky's ranked 16th in the country. They were like so-so in the SEC. The SEC's loaded. I think 12 or 13 teams made the tournament, but you know, it's not the best. You know, it's a pretty winnable regional for Michigan. They also have to play Notre Dame there, though. So if Bobian brings it, and if their bats are existent, I think they can win. But both of those are ifs based off of the past 2 weeks showing. So we'll keep tabs on both of those teams. If they do well, we'll maybe devote a little bit more time to them next week. Next week, we'll also talk 2018 depth chart and comparing it to 2016. More football recruiting, more basketball recruiting. Probably have some basketball news, I would think. It would be getting pretty close to decision day for Matthews. I guess technically has a couple weeks, but would imagine he wants to decide sooner than later. So yeah, that's going to do it for the Wolverine 24/7 podcast. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Zach Sean for Steve Lorenz. I hope you had fun. Hope you learned something, and we'll see you next week.